It's good for customers in the sense that, and consumers in the sense that, larger organizations often will have more resources and more staff and more ability to give you service in some ways. It's bad for customers in a way that there is a tendency to get away from that personal feeling of your personal health care, that you're able to call up your clinician, provider, your doctor, your non-physician practitioner, and actually have a chance to talk to them and work through a problem, or go in and see them and sit down and talk to them with a problem, and they'll have adequate time to take care of you. That is not necessarily the way that treatment is happening today. Number six, future payments are based on outcomes. And we all agree that it's important that we start looking at how, not just how much care we're giving, but what kind of care we're giving. And there's a number of ways this is happening. Accountable care organizations is we have all these words now and acronyms. I don't want to, I'm trying to not use all of them, but these are physician hospital organizations that work together to try and decrease costs and make care more efficient so that the overall cost is less, and if they make the cost less, then both the hospital and the physician organization or the physician practices can benefit from that financially as well. Bundled payments are typically around one service. Typically, like for instance, I'm not saying it happens here in this community, but in some communities, hip replacements, for instance, or knee replacements are a bundled service. The Medicare will pay one fee for the whole thing. That is the doctor, the device, the hospitalization, the rehab, the whole thing. They'll pay one price for that. And if you're able to provide care for less than what that costs, then those people providing the care are able to split up the difference and make it more profitable, rather than just delivering more care. Patient-centered medical homes, we hear a lot about patient-centeredness, but this is another design to try and find a way to encourage care to be more coordinated, to make sure that when you go to the hospital or when you go to the nursing home or when you go to the emergency room or the intermediate care, that there's a process in place for trying to pull people together to make that to coordinate that care. And the question is fee-for-service being replaced? Well, I think fee-for-service is always going to be here to some degree, because there are some services that you need to pay people to do the work for. You can't just say, well, we're going to pay you this global fee. I mean, there were stories back in the HMO days when you paid doctors a capitated fee, that they took the fee and didn't provide much service. That's not the idea we want to promulgate here. We want the care to be appropriate, and there are some things that the most appropriate payment model might be fee-for-service. But it does indefinitely, the Affordable Care Act encourages innovative ways to engage with your physician. So more and more you're going to see doctors offering texting, email, Skype services, telemedicine type services, to be able to interact with patients, so that especially some patients who are homebound or who don't really need to be seen in the office, I think you're going to see more and more encouragement to use those innovative ways to engage with your physician. So the seventh thing is that there's going to be increasing penalties. If you don't do some things as a clinician, as a physician, you're going to be penalized. Up to now, if you prescribed electronically, you got rewarded for that. You got a little bonus for doing that. Now you're going to get a penalty if you don't do it. Patient quality reporting systems, that's a way of, we kind of keep track of some things. One of the reasons your doctor is there at the computer is trying to make sure all the report is done correctly. But PQRS was bonused before, but currently after 2015 is going to be a penalty. Meaningful use is the way people talk about whether the computer you use is being used appropriately. But if you don't comply with these implementation standards, then there's going to be penalties for that too. So in 2015, 2016, 2017, until today, actually today is a historic day, because until today, these penalties would have been in place. As of today, because of legislation that was passed by the Senate on Tuesday, these penalties won't go into effect, and there will be more bonuses for your providers. And you'll see more consumerism in the marketplace. You'll see more rating of doctors, and one of the more consistent sites is the Physician Compare website on that CMS is developing. I think it reflects an increase in people wanting to have a voice in how they get their care, and you'll see consumers doing more shopping and doing more intelligent shopping, and they're going to be demanding more information from us. So I, too, had a few graphs, and I'll try to get these through these quickly because this is actually, if you notice, this graph is actually the same graph. This is the Gallup graph that Amber put in early. You can see the same 18% peak. What I didn't have is the end of quarter or end the fourth quarter of 14 and first quarter of 15. So this dropped off from 13.4 to 11.2. So as a result of the Affordable Care Act, I think you can say that there's been a significant number of people get additional insurance coverage. Premiums have risen a little bit, but not nearly as quickly as we thought they would rise. And there's more plans participating than we actually hoped for in many places. This is a look at all of the states. Colorado having the lowest, that actually had a decrease in their change of 15, a decrease in their insurance premium of 15.6%. California was a modest increase of about 0.8%, but it was up to 8.7% in Tennessee. So overall, what's happening is that the net effect on the federal budget is to reduce the deficit. You can see in March 2010, the Medicare budget was about $900 billion, and there was base Medicaid payment here. That dropped in August of 2010 after the Affordable Care Act was enacted, and the Affordable Care Act Medicaid and exchanges were introduced. And then now in April of 2014, the overall cost in billions of dollars has decreased from a peak of $1,400 billion to about $1,300 billion or $1,250 billion, something like that. Whether these trends will continue is really, you know, this is maybe too early to tell, but it looks like some of the things that we were trying to do that were being, I should say, were trying to be done with the Affordable Care Act are coming to fruition. One of the things we do know is that people who have insurance do better. So the all-cause mortality rate, when you look at people who have insurance from 2001 to 2010, all-cause mortality rate drops for all of those folks. I think that's just, it's one of the things one of the reasons we think it's important for everyone to have health care. So our overall increase in health care costs is at a historic low. It's actually lower than this for 2012 to 2023. It's projected to be 1.1%. Historically, it's been up closer to 2%. In addition, we've seen some employer premiums increase, but not as much as we expected them to increase. And typically, winners, some of these slides, I'll have to say, are a little close. Winners outnumber losers. That is, among those who switched from a non-compliant independent plan to a compliant non-group plan, is the monthly premium amount you pay after tax credit for your current plan higher or lower than what you paid for your previous plan, or is it about the same? 46% said it was lower. 15% said it was about the same. 39% said it was higher. So, it's 46% to 39% winners out over losers. So Covered California is our exchange here in California. These in 2009, this was the projection of the employer group. This is what it was. The employer was 46%. The employers provided 46% of the insurance. Medi-Cal provided 19%. Medicare 10%. The uninsured were 19%. And individual market was only 6%. In 2016, we project that the employer group will drop to 35%. The exchange will increase will take up a lot of this other market that wasn't there before of 22%. Medi-Cal will be a little bit larger at 22%. Medicare will be a little larger because of the baby boom at 12%, and the uninsured will drop from 19% to 8%, and this individual market will have gone away because it's part of the exchange. or essentially gone away. There's 1%. So I don't think the ACA is going away. I think health plans, doctors, hospitals, all have changed the way they're operating to comply with it. I think the consumers are getting used to it, and generally I think it's more of a political issue than it is an economic issue today. I wanted to talk a little bit about just a couple of other things, and then I'll close. But I think one of the challenges for the insurance exchange is to actually make sure that there are adequate networks for people to be seen, and that's the challenge for both the exchange, Covered California, and for Medicare for Medi-Cal managed care as well. As many of you know, you may or may not know, but a year and a half ago in Butte County, we moved from generally from fee-for-service Medi-Cal to two major insurers, California Health and Wellness, which is a Centene product out of Missouri, and Anthem Blue Shield, and Anthem Blue Cross, I'm sorry, which is, you know, a local company, or California and a national company. But the networks have historically been very narrow, and it's very difficult to get in, even when somebody's taking those plans, it's difficult to get in to see them. And I think that's primarily because we've got physician workforce issues. It was already pointed out by Amber that a large number of our doctors in California are already over the age of 60. And with all of these additional things, as that shark tank I was showing you before, all those challenges make it less and less appealing for doctors to practice into their 80s or until they die, which is what many, many people did for years and years before this generation of doctors. We'll have to see whether this is able to make it a more effective, more efficient system and can attract some of those older doctors to stay in it. I do believe that there needs to be new delivery systems. I think it's important that physicians have an important part in leading that, because I don't care whether, I mean, it is important to have hospitals, and it's important to have hospital employees, but you can't provide care without clinicians being there. And that's why I think it's important for them to be involved in the new delivery systems. And I think it's important for them to be involved in data ownership and exchange, because that also is going to be key to providing security and safety and ensuring that the data that's being used is appropriate. There are a number of things here. I've used this slide for other talks, but all I would just say is that it's increasingly important that we provide a safe environment to deliver the care, and that what we deliver is quality. Now, sometimes what the government calls quality, or what even an insurer calls quality, is questionable whether it really provides true quality of care or not. Most of us recognize quality care when we actually are working with the hospital, working with our doctor, working with the nurse that works with us. We can tell when we're getting quality care. Some of those things are not measurable, but we do need to start thinking very carefully about safety, about a team approach, about systems approaches to managing care. And I just said more about control of the data. All I will say here is that in the Medi-Cal managed care, this is pediatrics, healthy families. The dual eligibles are people who have Medi-Cal and Medicare. There's a rural expansion, which increased expansion to those who are 138% of the federal poverty limit. And then those who are in that 138, that expansion from 88% to 138% of the federal poverty limit, are also newly eligible. All of those folks are essentially being enrolled in Medi-Cal managed care plans, whether it's Centene or Anthem in our county. In more northern rural counties, it's Partnership Health Plan up in Shasta, Siskiyou counties. I think as a community, you need to recognize what a big problem the physician workforce problem is. It's very difficult to attract young doctors to rural counties, and we've got to find ways. Both hospitals, physician organizations, and communities need to work together to make our communities attractive to these young professionals. Most of the time, young doctors today are not marrying a person who is going to be a housewife there, or a person who's going to be a house husband. They're marrying somebody who has a similar career, civil engineers, electrical engineers, computer engineers, stockbrokers, many attorneys. You can name any profession practically, and they will be married to a doctor. But when you're trying to attract those doctors to a rural community, many times we aren't able to provide that employment opportunity for their spouse. So we need to provide not only those things, but we need to provide the right environment so that we can actually attract those young doctors to our communities and retain them for the long term. Because you and I, and I'm speaking personally here, but we're all going to need a doctor to take care of us eventually. And that's an important thing for our community to focus on. One of the things I will say about the Affordable Care Act is that it actually, for the first time that I can remember since I've been in practice, for the last several years, 3 to 4 years, health care has been one of the most hot topics to talk about ever. In the 1990s, when we were talking about HMOs and Hillary Care and that sort of stuff, it wasn't the same conversation. But today, I sense that, just because of your interest here tonight, that communities are concerned. They're interested. They want to find ways to make health care work for them. And I think that's a very admirable thing. So with that, I think I don't need to do this. I was just talking about health exchange, which is information exchange, so that people could talk to each other, so that there's seamless information flow. And I guess this is my last couple of slides. You can either sort of sit on the sidelines and act like you don't really care and you don't have an opinion about whatever happens to healthcare, or you can be Minutemen and get out there in the trenches and start trying to advocate and trying to find ways to make the healthcare system work more effectively for you. Thank you.
This is the Doctor's Inn live at Anlo Hospital for a report
card
on the
Affordable
Care Act.
Thank you, Dr. Thorpe. Now I'd like to invite Dr. Bill Skeen up for his presentation.
And we'll continue at Anlo up till 8 o'clock. At that point, we'll resume regular programming. This is Ken Logan, the Doctor's Inn.
Good evening. Can we hear me? Great. Am I advancing my own slides here?
Do you have a pointer? I can do it for you.
Okay. It's fine. There we go. And we'll just go backwards. Great. So, yes, my name is Bill Skeen, and I'm the executive director of a group called Physicians for a National Health Program. I'm in charge of our California chapter. And I'm delighted to be here at Enloe and also with you here tonight in Chico. I did find this vintage photo of your hospital, which I decided to include in my slides. Physicians for a National Health Program is a group of around 20,000 physicians nationwide who believe that we should have some kind of national health program as our solution to our healthcare problems that we've been talking about here tonight. So I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse to go last after our last two presenters. I do find that I have some of the same material. However, I think I'm going to present it with a different somewhat different spin or a different point of view. And for things that have been covered before, I'll go through them fairly quickly. But tonight I also do have some ideas about how we can move forward to help resolve some of the issues that were brought up that still exist in our healthcare system that were not completely resolved with the last round of reform with the Affordable Care Act. Am I loud enough? Can you guys hear me okay there? Okay, great. So the Affordable Care Act is turning 5. Oh, okay. And there we go. So I'm sure most of you know that the United States has a healthcare system that actually has two pieces to it, which are really quite different. One is our program for our seniors who are 65 and over. This is publicly funded insurance, and we refer to that as Medicare, which has been around since 1965. For people who are not yet 65, we, of course, have our private insurance system, where people purchase insurance through private companies and often through their employer. So the Affordable Care Act was born 5 years ago on March 23rd, 2010. That's when it was, the first day it was enacted. It was originally called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, but more recently they simply referred to it as the ACA or the Affordable Care Act or sometimes Obamacare. The previous speakers have covered a lot of the stuff that happened when the Affordable Care Act was enacted, a lot of the major provisions. I did want to just briefly review four of them that I think are really salient for you here in the room today. One is the Medicaid expansion. The other would be the increased regulation on our insurance companies, the institution of an individual mandate, and the establishment of the health benefits exchange that we've heard about before. So, I think Amber covered the Medicaid expansion pretty well. A lot of people think that Medicaid, which in California, of course, we call Medi-Cal, is our insurance program for the poor. One thing I'd like to point out is that in reality, before the Affordable Care Act, it only covered certain categories of poor people, mainly women and children. And with the Affordable Care Act, one of the most significant changes is that it now truly covers all of the poor. And by that definition, that would be up to people whose incomes are up to 138% of the federal poverty level. Amber mentioned that there was a Supreme Court decision a couple years ago which made the states, made expanding Medicaid optional for the states, and 22 states decided not to participate at the moment. Six states are discussing how they might eventually join that. Okay, the other thing, next major thing that the Affordable Care Act did was to increase regulation on our insurance companies. Again, prior speakers have talked a lot about that, but perhaps we can talk a little bit more about some of the reasons why that was necessary. Like all corporations, private insurance companies exist to make a profit. Basically, we all give them our premiums up front, and to the extent that they don't have to spend that money and they get to keep it, they make a profit. This app creates, in some ways, a perverse incentive that if they're able to deny care, they make more profit for their shareholders. And I can tell you over the decades, private insurance companies have become experts at finding ways to deny people care. Dr. Thorpe mentioned a few of them that were fixed by the Affordable Care Act. One, of course, was lifetime caps. So the only people that were running into their lifetime cap were people who were really sick and needed some really expensive treatment. So basically, you know, when you are we're getting your radiation or getting your heart surgery and you started to get near your cap, at that point you might be cut loose by insurance company and find yourself without coverage at all. So a fairly cruel decision in terms of saving money for the insurance companies. Other things were mentioned before, rescission. Rescission was basically perhaps you need some expensive treatment. Your insurance company decides to go look up your initial application. They discover that you forgot to mention your acne. They accuse you of fraud, they cancel your policy on the spot, and they don't have to pay for your expensive treatment. There were many other kinds of these practices by the insurance companies, and some of them still exist, but the Affordable Care Act did get rid of them. A very nice improvement is the getting rid of the pre-existing condition clause. So for many, for instance, if you were signing up with a new health insurance company and you had asthma, they would insure you and cover all of your medical costs except your asthma for the first 1 or 2 years. And then finally, if you were still on the insurance and your asthma, you know, hadn't taken you down, they would start to cover your asthma costs as well. One other benefit, of course, that we're all familiar with from the Affordable Care Act is that young people were allowed to stay on their parents' policies until they were 26, which was another way of expanding coverage. Okay, we talked about the individual mandate. What the individual mandate does really is create one large risk pool. So if everyone has to contribute to the system, it makes it less expensive for all the rest of us. And also, it's just a good idea for everyone to have health insurance. You know, there's some talk sometimes about, well, maybe young people, they're healthy, why should they be forced to buy a policy? And that's basically because unless you have a crystal ball, you're never sure when, you know, the day might come that you accidentally look the wrong way and step out in front of that bus. Everyone is at risk for any kind of health problem, and so it's really best if everyone has insurance. Amber talked about the penalties. Okay, the health benefits exchanges were set up in 14 states. California, of course, was the first. And sometimes there's confusion among people I talk to about Obamacare, you know, insurance or the Affordable Care Act insurance. And it's a slight little adjustment, but the Affordable Care Act is not an insurance plan. It is, you know, it's a set of changes to our healthcare system. And the marketplace itself is a place where you go. It's an online marketplace. You go and you review the plans that are available, and you decide which one might work best for you. This is Covered California. When you go to the website, this is what you find. This is your departure point where you can start an application. Okay, so our prior speakers did talk about the health benefits exchanges, but I did want to mention more specifically that they're organized in four metal tiers. So there's bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. The differences between these plans are in the out-of-pocket expenses. So if you get a bronze plan, it's going to cover 60% of your healthcare costs. The next tier covers 70, the next tier covers 80, and then at the platinum plan is going to cover 90% of your expenses. So the premiums are much higher for if you select a platinum plan. However, the other out-of-pocket expenses are lower, so it's kind of a trade-off. Overall, out-of-pocket expenses for all of these plans are capped each year. And the other difference that I would mention about the metal tier plan. So when you go shopping on the marketplace, if you live in Santa Barbara like I do, or if you live up here in Chico, you're not going to see the same plans available to you. That's because the most health plans offer insurance in a network that is only located in a closed geographic network. So even, for instance, if you live in Los Angeles and you want to get health care with your plan in San Francisco, that would not be inside your network. So the networks are not only closed, or limited, I should say, in terms of the number of providers that you can access, they're also limited in terms of the geographic region where you can seek access. And oftentimes, if you want to find care outside of a network, it's going to be either not covered, in which case you're on your own to pay for it, or with substantial out-of-pocket expenses. Subsidies. So we did mention subsidies. I would just say that of everyone that signed up nationwide to get health insurance through the various exchanges, 87% of people did indeed receive subsidies. Okay, so I hopefully that will kind of end the part where I overlap with my prior speakers, and we'll talk go into kind of a different direction here in talking about what are some of the things that we could do to improve our healthcare system. So with the Affordable Care Act, the people, you know, who were trying to create change recognized that our healthcare system needed change, and all of those involved in trying to figure out what that change should be, I'm sure had a set of goals in mind. Whether you're government, whether you're a legislator, whether you're consumers, whether you're a health policy expert or a healthcare economist, I think we probably all have shared goals. So I think the goals of reform might be summarized as saying that we would all like to have comprehensive, high quality, and high quality, comprehensive, affordable health care for all. So that one sentence rolls together four things that I think can be considered a goal for health care reform. So in keeping that in mind, we can kind of move ahead and take a look at what was achieved with the reforms of the Affordable Care Act. One of them that we have to mention right off the top is that the Affordable Care Act has not yet succeeded in insuring everyone. And in fact, there are 30 million people that are going to be left out. These are people without insurance. And most of this is due to the fact that the states that decided not to offer health care coverage to their poor is leaving their poor uninsured. So those make up the bulk of these 30 million people. My organization, Physicians for National Health Program, did a study out of Harvard some years ago that showed that